Welcome to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. A couple of weeks ago, we looked at how companies are making stuff greener, from cars to jackets to light bulbs. But how about if the products of your business are weightless? They're cool apps or moving essays or cloud storage, things that seem like they couldn't possibly hurt the planet. Toby Miller has investigated the impact of this new intangible economy on both producers and consumers. He's the co-author of Greening the Media, and he blogs at Psychology Today. Toby, thanks for being here.
It's a real pleasure to be with you, Kara.
So one of the things that, you know, I'm often silently proud about is that I sit at my computer and I read stuff all day, but I'm not actually using paper. But I'm a little concerned that you're here to tell me that's not quite as virtuous as, you know, I might think it is.
You're not as good a kid as you think you are.
Exactly.
Right. Let's put it this way, Kara. There's no established agreed system for determining whether it's greener to use paper or greener to be talking as we are now electronically. Everyone thinks, and this is a natural assumption, that it must be better. After all those emails we send out and receive say at the bottom, think of the environment, don't cut down a tree, don't print this if you don't have to.
Right.
And that seems to make a lot of logical sense. But, here are the buts. One, the trees that most effectively capture carbon and look after us in terms of our carbon emissions are not old and venerable trees like me. They're young and sprightly trees. And one of the things about, and I'm sounding like I'm a booster for the pulp and paper industry now, but one of the things for that industry that has to be said is that it does a lot of replanting because of all the forests that it tears down. And that replanting gives us lots of trees that do very, very good carbon capture. And then the second point is this. When, for example, you do a Google search, we are using electricity at the point of our own search. We're using electricity at the point of the delivery from the search engine. And we're also engaged in all kinds of wizardry as we go around the internet using the packet system for the answer to be found. It happens normally very quickly, but we don't know exactly how that powering is happening. And the same applies when it comes to the manufacture of the very gadgets we're using. So it's not as simple as it seems.
So you're telling me that every time I Google something, every time somebody, you know, goes on Yahoo News or you know, you can search internally like at the New York Times website, every time you do that, what are you, like, burning a little bit of carbon?
You may well be. Of course, in the case of Google, it says that its annual carbon emissions in 2011, the latest figures we have, were the equivalent of the entire country of Laos in Southeast Asia.
Whoa.
Or the United Nations organization. That said, Google and Amazon and some other companies, sorry, Google and Apple, I should say, not Amazon, are using non-carbon burning forms of power increasingly. Sometimes they're renewables, sometimes they're nuclear. But even if they're using those forms of energy, it doesn't mean we are at our end. And also it doesn't mean in terms of the packet system and where it drives the message, all those other points are using renewables. So it's a factor we need to bear in mind.
So what's this packet system thing that you're talking about in terms of search?
Well, the way the internet works, as you know, is that it was devised in order to survive the possibility of a Soviet attack during the Cold War on the United States National Communications System, such that there wouldn't be one building or one set of wires you could bomb and then knock out the entire outfit. So the packet system, which is the internet basically, floats around looking for all kinds of places it can go in order to find a spot where its message can be received, get an answer, and then go back to the sender.
So we don't have any sense from the figures that Google publishes, from the figures that other companies publish, whether it's in fact better to sit at home, let's say on Sunday, reading a whole bunch of articles, finding out how your favorite sports teams are doing, all that, versus getting that, you know, like doorstop 10-pound Sunday newspaper that people used to get. I mean, we don't have any sense of what's a better decision or better for the environment.
Let's say the science isn't in. Because after all, if you are, for example, lying at home, and there seems to be a lot of lying around at home in your life, Kara, as there is
well,
in mine. Maybe it's something in a last name. But that lying around at home might involve, for example, deciding that you are going to read the New York Times or the Boston Globe or whatever it is online at 7:30 on a Sunday night. Now, 7:30 on a Sunday night is also a time when a heck of a lot of electricity is being used in your town or my town. It might be football night, it might be baseball night, it might be lying around watching movies night. But we're part of that whole system. We're part of a drain on the system. And so in order to do a really comprehensive scientific audit on the different impact on the environment of reading the Boston Globe that way versus watching the NFL on television, we'd need to work out exactly what all the power sources were, as well as the environmental impact of the creation of the different technologies we were using. Maybe that your personal digital assistant or other device that you're using actually has a pretty dark environmental record, even more than the newspaper you're holding in your palm.
Is there anything that companies who are in the business of delivering information, which seems like a very clean business, is there anything they can do to be greener and reduce their carbon footprint?
Well, some of them are being much more transparent than they used to be about it, Google in particular. But let's take, for example, a New York Times instance. The New York Times digital journalism isn't just about the cost environmentally of sending you the information and you're receiving it. It's also the environmental cost of having things called, for example, automotive reviews or travel journalism, because that leaves a big footprint as well, as does the very service of having foreign correspondents or of having stringers or of war correspondents.
Yeah, but that's just a few people compared to the number. I mean, like one person going to report in Afghanistan, I would think wouldn't leave that big a carbon footprint.
Probably true. But what about the impact of somebody writing travel journalism for the New York Times, it being very effective, it being boosted by the local tourism authorities, and then millions of people around the world reading it and thinking, I might go there. That looks like fun.
Right.
It's even got an ecologically sound green tourism aspect to it.
Right.
And then flying around the world to do so. So, you know, that is in part the responsibility of the news organization that sets out to do travel journalism. So I think that cultural producers, whether it's NPR or anybody else, should be saying, this is what we think is the carbon footprint of the making of this program or this story or this film, and this is what we think it costs to download depending on where you are. That kind of information, to me, puts the onus on the responsibility on the producer and allows the consumer then to make a considered and citizen-like decision about whether or not to participate or, we might say, collude.
Well, isn't that kind of a big burden, though? I mean, a Hollywood movie has a ton of money behind it, whereas if you think about radio or TV, there are like local TV programs, local radio programs all over the place that have tiny little budgets, and I don't know that they have any way or the money to figure out, you know, the carbon footprint of their show.
That's probably a fair comment, but just as we expect there to be reporting information about things like the number of women hired into senior executive jobs or the cultural slash racial diversity of a workforce beyond a certain number of people employed in a business, so it seems to me we should expect precisely the same responsibility when it comes to the environment. I mean, if we can expect decent audits and proper accounts to be delivered by five-person companies, if we can expect individuals to give accurate information to the Internal Revenue Service about their incomings and outgoings, I don't see much of any different when it comes to our precious Earth.
Okay, so let's move a little bit from these sort of, as you said, these sort of weightless things that we're talking about, like reading an op-ed, which seems like it doesn't harm anybody, anywhere, or anything, to the actual stuff we're reading it on. I mean, everybody's reading these things on a tablet, on a laptop, and we're entering this time, and you've written about this a lot, this Internet of Things that people talk about, where there's going to be computer chips, not just in laptops, there's going to be computer chips in umbrellas that glow, the handle glows when it wants you to take it, you know, because it's raining outside and it knows what the weather forecast is. Many people already have smart thermostats that learn what their habits are during the day. Are we entering this era where things feel very sort of clean and seamless, but we're actually producing a whole bunch more junk?
Well, some people think that you can walk outside or look outside or read a weather forecast and know whether it's raining, and you don't need your umbrella to tell you. Your umbrella is actually there to protect you from the rain.
But of course, I don't know.
They're just old fuddy-duddies, Cara, aren't they?
Looking out the window is a heavy lift sometimes.
The Internet of Things sounds marvelous. It sounds as though it's taking this green weightlessness, this area where the residues are code, not carbon, and turning them into a magnificent means of ensuring that all the products we buy are tailored to our particular needs. And certainly the Internet of Things means that dental experts and medical experts, for example, can create prostheses that are specially designed for the particular body of the patient they're treating. There's no doubt about that. But as we see the proliferation of 3D printers across the country, many of them at extremely low cost nowadays, very little is being done to think about, for example, the occupational health and safety impact of a 3D printer. Having a 3D printer in a confined space without the right kind of air conditioning, or at least fresh air flowing through the area, may have all kinds of health and safety implications. Again, minimal research has actually been conducted on this, only a small amount. The amount that's out there, conducted by very reputable environmental scientists and health experts, is quite chilling. But that's not part of the shtick that we're given when we're told about the Internet of Things, nor is this idea of the overproduction of the Internet of Things, the idea that we're going to get more and more and more stuff. Well, this country already consumes more stuff than anybody else in history and throws a heck of a lot of it away. Does that mean we really need more and more? Shouldn't we be asking about the built-in obsolescence of the materials we already have and asking about the ephemera of a throwaway society?
Well, no. I think somebody could argue, hey, I mean, a 3D printer might stop you from having to, like, go to the store, which involves a car and involves gas and all that, and get something. And you know, something like a thermostat that's a smart thermostat, in an ideal world, better than a dumb thermostat, it knows when you're not home. So it doesn't heat up your house unnecessarily, throwing energy away when you just, like, you don't need your house to be 75 degrees.
No, ideally, that's absolutely right. And there's no doubt that many of the technologies and possibilities that we're discussing can be environmentally beneficial. And you've certainly lit on one when it comes to the smart thermostat system. Another question, though, would be how these smart thermostat systems are being funded. Because there are lots and lots of gigantic corporations that are taking the lead on these things with quite significant public subsidy. Whether that's the most efficient means of doing it rather than actually making them public utilities is, it seems to me, a very serious question that needs to be asked. But certainly there are bountiful environmental ends in addition to corporate ones that can flow from these innovations. Don't get me wrong. I just want us to look at benefits as well as costs and not leap up and down and be cheerleaders for something, for example, in the area of 3D printing, that we might have real reason to reconsider when the fullness of time has passed.
Okay, so when you look at the new generation of both gadgets and this sort of weightless knowledge that travels across the internet to all of us, when you think about the next generation of this stuff, do you think that there's a good chance that it's going to be, you know, dirtier than what exists, that it's going to be more polluting, more carbon intensive than what we've got now?
I think lots of the companies are trying to do the right thing. They're publishing more and more information. Many of them, some I mentioned, are involved in trying to get greener sources of energy. But unless we have regulation that actually requires them to do this and requires them to be explicit about their energy means, and unless we are given solidly green audits in a transparent manner of the gadgets we use and the electricity we're relying on to engage in the searches and the reading and the work and the watching of football that we do, we'll not be in a good position to make considered, careful, rational citizen as well as consumer judgments of our own conduct.
Toby Miller is co-author of Greening the Media. He blogs at Psychology Today. Thank you very much for this conversation.
It's been a pleasure.